Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 15 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather Brooker. Thank you for tuning into the show today. We got a great one for you. Jillian Armanante is my guest on the show today. And if you don't recognize her name, you absolutely will recognize her face. She's been in dozens of television shows and movies, everything from Private Practice, Grey's Anatomy, to my favorite, Judging Amy. She's also currently on Fresh Off the Boat on ABC, which is where I met her a year ago when I did a small part on that show. And she was so lovely and could not wait to have her come on the show. She's also been in movies like Girl Interrupted, A Mighty Heart, The Dark Knight Rises. But more specifically, I'm having her on the show today to talk about how she sort of took the bull by the horns, if you will, and created her own television series. And it's called Kittens in a Cage. And you guys, if you have any aspirations for writing or directing, and you're an actor, or I mean, even if you're not an actor and it's just something you want to do, you really want to listen to her story about how she found inspiration herself and got motivated. That's definitely something I struggle with on a daily basis. If you go to motherhoodinhollywood.com at all, you see one of my recent posts was about writing. And, you know, I've been really frustrated because I seem to have so many ideas and just sitting down and putting them on paper or virtual paper online, whatever you want to call it, is really hard. And I have such admiration and respect for people who can sit down and write a feature-length film or a television pilot or, you know, an hour-long drama, anything like that, a poem, like anybody who can sit down and find the patience. Because I go down the rabbit hole of social media so fast, especially with the podcast, because I'm constantly wanting to update social media. I'm updating my Instagram. I'm updating Twitter and Facebook. And I want to make sure that MIH is out there. Now I'm addicted to Periscope. I try to Periscope whenever I can. So there's a lot of distractions, and I'm trying to find some ways, some tips to just tune all of that out, especially while my daughter is at preschool. I have no excuse because I have a couple days a week where I have a little bit of time to myself and I can actually sit down and do some writing with these ideas. So if anybody has any tips on what they do to do some writing and get their ideas out there, I'd love to hear it. So send them my way, you jerks. And I say that with kindness. Okay, before we get into the interview with Jillian, I want to give a quick shout out to some of our new Twitter followers. Marco Gonzalez, hey, how's it going? Perfect Mind and Body, Maternity Madam, and Champy Kemp. Just a few of the people who are now following us on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to tweet at me and follow MIH Podcast on the Twitter. If you want to find us anywhere else, we're on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood. I say we. I don't know why I say we. It's literally just me. Like, my grandma used to say, who's we? You got a turd in your pocket? And which is gross and disgusting, but I sort of love it. No, it's just me. I'm on Motherhood in Hollywood at Instagram and also on Facebook and Periscope. Find me at MIH Podcast on Periscope, you guys. I got to go see a friend's really cool one-woman show the other day. Her name's Laura House. And, you know, again, another very inspirational woman who decided to create her own material. And then she put it up on stage and, you know, standing ovation at the end of the night. She shared her story and bared her soul and just really brave and lovely. And I wish I could force myself to do more creative things like that. I'm working on it, you guys. I'm working on it. In the meantime, I'm going to wrap up this little portion of the show. What should I call this, by the way? I always spend a few minutes at the top of the show where I talk to you guys. It's just me and you one-on-one. Lovingly embracing each other. No, I'm trying to figure out like what would be a fun, like, what should I call this? One-on-one with Heather? Heather's alone time? No, that might be a little creepy. Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. In the meantime, I am going to stop talking now and let you guys hear this amazing interview with Jillian Armanante. Joining me today in the studio is Jillian Armanante. I have been saying your name over and over again for the past few days. Is that weird?
You did it perfectly, which is very rare.
Armanante. I almost want to add a...
You rolled
it's very
R.
Italian, right?
It is Italian.
Yeah, I love it. And I've also been racking my brain for a few days trying to figure out like how I wanted to delve into this show, because you have so much in the span of your career that you've done that I'm like, where should we begin? So, of course, let's begin in the beginning.
All right.
So you're from Jersey?
I grew up in New Jersey. Take the bridge, don't turn. That's sort of where I grew up.
Yeah.
Past Paramus.
And then what about Jersey? Were you like, I got to act? Were you like, this is it? I feel the need.
Well, I have to credit my mom because, you know, when she was a little girl during World War II, three of her brothers were away fighting in the Pacific, I think. And so she sort of delved into the whole movie situation in the 1940s. And then when I was a kid, I was the last of her five kids, she would wake me up and show me the Million Dollar Movie or show me this or that and be like, look at this performance. This is Natalie Wood. She's 5 years old. She's going to do a monologue in German. I mean, she would wake me up in the middle of the night and show me like cool acting and occasionally let me stay home from school because, you know, the second half of The Nun Story was on with Audrey Hepburn. And so I just sort of got the bug like that.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else in my family are like chemical engineers and stuff. So,
were they like, Jillian, she's just an actor.
Well, I was always the dramatic one in the family. I was the youngest. And,
sure.
And, but where I grew up in New Jersey was the suburbs where a lot of the old Broadway hoofers would come to settle once they had kids.
Oh.
So when I did summer stock in my town, literally like Tom and Jane Carradine, who like were in West Side Story and mm-hmm. Hello Dolly. And, you know, all the parents who helped us do summer stock were all Broadway veterans.
Wow.
So our summer stock was amazing. And it kind of gave me the bug. So.
Yeah. So you started performing at a young age then?
Well, in
high school. Just started having like an interest in it?
Yeah. I mean, you audition for the school play kind of thing. And then the summer program. And I think I played Bunny Watson in the desk set. The Katharine Hepburn role in high school. And my dad came to see that. And he was always like, learn to type. And
parents are always so practical. They're like, this acting thing is neat, but just in case, learn a trade or learn a skill or something to fall back on.
Well, and I always purposely didn't, so I didn't have another choice to fall back
an option.
On. I wish I had learned to type because I ended up doing quite a bit of writing. So he came to see that show, and after the show, he said, it's okay if you pursue acting in college.
Oh, wow.
So it was a big, and I have a photo of it, the moment he told me that. And I was like, click. And it was a great
picture.
How
lovely.
Yeah.
What a nice, like, blessing to get from your dad. That's so wonderful. And your mom's still supportive? Or
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Absolutely.
And then I read somewhere that you had a theater company in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
How did you go from Jersey to Seattle?
In a 1965 Plymouth Valiant.
Oh, wow.
I helped someone drive their stuff across to Seattle. I had about $8 when I got there, so I wasn't really leaving anytime soon. And I went through the phone book and called all the theaters.
Yeah.
Mistakenly, I called a porn house called the Apple Theater, which is no longer there.
Yeah, sure. It was a mistake. No.
It was. Yeah, well, it was. And Seattle was hitting that wave right after Chicago and Steppenwolf. And mm-hmm. I figured that scene had already been played out and I had never been to Seattle. And then very next call I made was a theater called Annex Theater, mm-hmm. which is still going strong. It's almost like 30 years later. And it was a, 2,400 square foot ex Fred Astaire dance studio that we had swung a real estate deal for. We paid $1 a month for it.
Wow.
And we did all original plays. We decided to write our own. And so we did a 3-week main stage and a 3-week black box. And so we were always in production. But a lot of great writers came out of there. Carl Gajicek, who like does TV shows. Paul Giamatti was one of our actors.
Oh, really?
So that was a great, it was started by Yale undergrads.
So do you feel like then people were drawn to Seattle because of the theater scene? Is that what was happening? Or
At the time, it had more theaters per capita than any other.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a huge, and you got to remember, this was the late 80s. There was, NEA funding. There was state funding.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan, although not my favorite president, mm-hmm. was good for actors and the arts.
How interesting.
Because he was one.
Yeah.
So it was a good time. It was also the height of the you know, Seattle grunge time. And, mm-hmm. you know, none of us had any money, but we all took care of each other. It was very communal kind of living. You'd put your 37 cents on the table, and then somebody else would put their money, and then finally you could get a pitcher of beer. So
priorities.
And I'm still very wonderful friends with everyone from that time.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So. I went to Oklahoma State for theater, mm-hmm. and I had a panic, you know, like halfway through my sophomore year, where, because my mom had told me, like, what are you going to do with a theater degree? And I started going, what am I going to do? Because exactly. I'm not a triple threat. Mm-hmm. I can't also, like, I wasn't a trained dancer and trained singer. I just really enjoyed acting. And everybody said, well, you can go to Broadway. LA wasn't even, like, an option. Mm-hmm. It was like, you go to Broadway and you can starve and hope that you make it. And somebody's just hiring actors that don't have all these skills. And so I panicked and was like, oh my gosh, I have to do something else. So I sort of lost faith in my in myself at that time, and then went into journalism. Yeah. But looking back now, it was a very smart choice for me to make, because now I'm still a journalist. I still get to use that degree, but still pursue acting as well. Exactly. And so I feel really lucky that I did that. So hearing you say that you had your family support is really nice.
Oh, are you kidding? It was amazing. But it was back, you know, before cell phones, before, you know, I remember I was 3,000 miles away. I'm 20 years old, and I would call my mom once a month.
Wow.
I'd be like, I'm still alive.
Just checking in.
You know, it was different. It was a different time, you know, so.
And anyway. You said that you wrote a bunch of plays, and that's something you've done continuously since then, right? Like, that is a big part of what you do, is writing.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, at Annex, you didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Everybody, what was great about the early theater scene there is the scene that we made was, if you're not acting in something, you're directing. If you're not directing, you're light designer, you're set designer, you build a crew. Everybody did everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I'd write or something. And my very first you know, a couple of years in town here in Los Angeles, I thought, well, I'm not going to sit around and wait for someone to pick me, or I'd be on a TV show or whatever, but I can always do theater, because mm-hmm. I got to study every realm of it. And so, you know, we've written a couple of plays and produced them here, you know, in Seattle as well. Mm-hmm. And with great success. It was kind of funny. I think, what was it? Oh, you know, I wrote a couple of plays and never won a thing in Seattle, and suddenly, like, you know, we were in LA. I was living in a horrible railroad apartment. It was like cockroach infested, and you know, somebody goes, "Have you seen this?" And I open the paper, and it's like, you know, the Ovation Award nominations. Like,
oh wow!
You know, we have more nominations than the Lion King. You know what I mean? But we had a $600 budget, so it was that kind of,
oh my gosh,
crazy.
But what a testament to your writing, though, and to just like telling a good story. Like, sometimes you don't have to have a big budget and a big production to tell a good story and have compelling characters.
Right. Well, and I'm kind of known for small budget, big production. Mm-hmm. Like, I set places on fire and have columns falling down. And, you know, it's all done. Yeah. So because of my time in Seattle, being able to, you know, choke the eagle on that dollar bill.
Yeah.
I'm able to accomplish huge things with very little money. So.
And then what was the motivation to come down to LA, if you... Just because it's where, like, all the productions were happening?
No, not at all. I'd never intended to move to Los Angeles. You know, I was in Seattle for 8 years and had a great time. And I love Seattle. But I got cast in a play, an 8-hour version of The Cider House Rules, mm-hmm. Written by John Irving originally, but adapted by Peter Parnell. And Tom Hulse, the actor, now Broadway producer, kept asking everybody for the role of Melanie, and everybody's like, "Have you met Jillian Armanante?" Because she was a very angry, big, defensive, physically athletic role, and he had just kept looking for this actress for a reading, and everybody, like 8 people, were like, "Have you met Jillian Armanante?"
Wow!
And so finally, he called me, and I workshopped it in Seattle, and it was put up at the Mark Taper Forum in the late 90s. Mm-hmm.
And you won an award for that too, right? Did I read that?
I think so. And then I went to New York and did it as well. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
a Drama Desk Award? Or was that for something
else? I got
else?
Nominated for a Drama Desk. I won a Theater World Award.
Yeah.
I won a bunch of awards in Los Angeles. But it was funny because I had also written, produced, and directed something. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, best play, 99-seat theater, you know, and then they called me up. And then it would be like, best play, Mark Taper Forum. Then I'd go up for Cider House. And so I was in a big... budget play and a tiny budget play at the same time. So
yeah.
It was kind of great. It was so, and having never won a thing in my life.
I mean, I imagine you were just on cloud nine.
Well, it was great. Except I still had cockroaches in my
brain. But that's so LA. Like, yeah. That's such an LA story then, because it's like you can be on top of the world 1 minute and then you can't afford to pay your rent or eat dinner or whatever.
Completely.
It's very LA.
You can't eat statues.
No. They're pretty, but they're you cannot shiny. Eat them. They do not pay your bills.
Exactly.
So you obviously then have a passion for theater and a love for it. Do you think that, have you noticed the big difference between like theater trained actors and then those who come out here and they just are television trained and don't have that background in theater?
Yeah, but I think you'd be surprised who, people are always like, oh, film actor. And I think, no, they're not. I've seen them in the trenches for 30 years. Like, yeah. They went to NYU. But I do know that, you know, people who are trained theater and are able to duplicate an intention night after night, but keep it real and keep it organic and keep it fresh and present in the moment and all mm-hmm. that stuff. I find that work on camera is so much more exhilarating and wonderful to act with and to direct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in the crapper, you're, you know, 14 hours in, you got to get the scene in the can. It's a 4-page scene and you get to a 2-hander scene with 2 theater actors. That thing's going to be done in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they just come in, you know,
yeah.
And it's great. So, And I find that when I work on camera with people who have extensive experience in theater,
mm-hmm.
there's a shorthand. There's definitely like, oh, if you go high status and I'll go low status and then we'll reverse. And that, you know, you could do things that a lot of time people who are used to acting against a piece of tape don't have that skill.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I noticed lately, maybe it was an article that I read that said fewer and fewer actors nowadays are bothering to take the time to do theater or become trained or like take classes from theater teachers or like intense acting classes because they know they don't have to. Because you could easily make a silly Vine video or YouTube video and you're up for a series regular part on, you know, a network show.
Totally.
So I kind of, you know, since I started out in theater and I grew up doing theater too my whole life in competitions in high school and all that stuff. I love acting classes. I value trained acting. Like, I think it's important, but you just can't help sometimes to sit back and go, what is the point?
Throw it out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the point if everybody is just going for like the name or the hot viral star of the moment?
Right. Yeah, it's tricky. Plus, you know, I mean, training is a double-edged sword as well. You know, they pound out anything sort of colloquially about your speech and they pound mm-hmm. out, you know, that you're supposed to stand tall and you're supposed to do this. And you're supposed to... But it's confusing to me because, you know, you're supposed to represent humanity.
Yeah.
And humanity isn't pretty people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like it's the size 4s aren't the clothes that fly off the shelves at Walmart.
Right.
You know? And
it's
so,
the one I'm always looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually am nothing against acting or, you know, people mm-hmm. But watching television and clicking from channel to channel to channel and seeing these
the same beautiful people,
beautiful teeth, frosted hair.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect angles. Like, yeah. And then I turn over the BBC and it's people with like crappy teeth and they're like living in the moment and they're just like ripping it and they look interesting and they look, I mean, I'm just so much more compelled. You know, there's a universality to that.
Do you think that's why all the BBC shows are doing well and all of these shows that are cropping up like on AMC and TNT and FX and the shows that are more gritty and I guess a little more real. Do you think that's why those are gaining popularity and the networks are kind of...
I mean, I don't know. I've always been attracted to the Brits just because of that. And, you know, certainly there are actors who, you know, I've had huge conversations with people about like, why are you fixing your teeth? Like mm-hmm. Woody Harrelson and Frances McDormand are like, why fix your teeth? That's not real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And those are the actors I really respect. So.
Sure.
But, you know, I do also know there is like a scientific attraction toward pretty people.
Sure. Yeah.
And I myself, you know, I was directing a play a couple of years back and I put it into the casting service and all of a sudden, you know, 7,000 headshots come in.
Wow. Yeah.
And you just like, oh, she's cute. Oh, he's hot. Or, you know, but it has nothing to do
with their talent.
With their talent. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I made sure I did not look at the photographs and just looked at the resumes before I called people in.
Yeah.
Because you know, I don't know. I think it's interesting when I moved to town, Roseanne was the biggest show on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And within 6 months, Baywatch was the biggest show on TV. Oh. So something...
I love Roseanne.
Clearly changed.
Something shifted. Yeah. But don't you think, though, that Roseanne in herself, she was a shift? Because prior to that, you had, like, you know, your... Well, I'm going a little farther back, but, like, your Leave It to Beaver moms, your perfect 1950s
Donna
housewife.
And,
yeah, the Donna Reed and stuff like that. I mean, those were, like, tiny waist, you know, perfect hair type moms. And then something shifted.
Yeah, the 70s, though, was kind of great. Like, when I was a kid and watching acting, it was sort of like the great acting.
Yeah.
Jane Alexander and, you know, Early Streep and, you know, TV. Angie Dickinson was on TV. And, you know, it was, there were women, you know what I mean? And and that acting, that really amazing acting, and Dustin Hoffman, all those people, it was amazing because it was a new sort of naturalistic, like, in the moment style that you know, that attracted me to the field to begin with. So,
but that sort of doesn't exist anymore.
I know, because they don't. You know, it's not about story; it's about demographic and box office and that stuff now. And it used to be about story. So
yeah,
it's tricky.
Everything's definitely shifted, and I know I'm a character actress. Do you consider yourself to be a character actress?
Hell yes.
I didn't want to label you and put that label on you.
Totally. Since I was like, I was always rocking the babushka at the school play.
Yeah, yeah. you're like, I'm like lady number three. I remember I got cast as a passionata von Climax in Little Abner, and I was so mad that I wasn't Daisy, like the lead. And my acting teacher was like, really?
Really?
She had to physically pull me aside and be like, look, you are not Daisy. This is just not you.
Yeah.
She's a petite blonde.
Right.
You're a tall redhead. Like, just embrace it. And then I was like, fine. I'll be this Von Climax lady.
You know, I always wanted to be the character actress, which is kind of funny to me. I mean, I grew up like, you know, I was such a weird kid, but I would fall in love with like Marie Dressler.
Yeah.
And then I'd watch all the like, Men in Bill and, you know, Anna Christie or whatever. And I just watch all of her movies. And she's a battle axe. I mean, she's just amazing. So I'd watch all the characters because I wanted to be that, because I knew that when I was 50 years old, you could still do that.
Yeah.
Whereas if, you know, whatever. Plus, I'm just, that's who I am.
But it's interesting now, though, a lot of the leading ladies, there's so much happening with like the Botox and the plastic surgery and all that stuff. They're extending their careers a little bit into their 50s and 60s as far as like leads. Some of them are.
You know, it's tricky because expression is in utero.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
I mean, nothing against it.
And you, talking about character acting and stuff like that. So you have done so many TV shows and so many films with great characters. A lot of them have been very heavy drama, right?
I know. I ride both sides of the fence.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have a preference for one or the other? Because the stuff I've seen, you did Grey's Anatomy, right?
Yeah.
And Private Practice?
Yes.
In both of them. And just really great dramatic parts, but they had like a little touch of levity. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like you can never just do one or the other. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I mean, I didn't even get to town until I was like 31. Yeah. So, you know, all of this, you know, I was in a dumpster in Seattle, like, like shopping my dinner. But,
So you came out here at 31 then, and we're just like, let's fucking do this.
Well, yeah. Well, I came with a play and then started working and then I never left.
That's fantastic.
So, but I, you know, it's, so I came rather late to the game, and doing something you've done for free for a decade and suddenly getting paid for it is like, really?
Yeah.
I can have fun and get paid?
Right.
So yes, I like doing the dramatic roles. I like doing the comic roles, but I always feel like, you know, in order to backwind the drama, you have to have levity. And in order to backwind the comedy, you have to have drama. So I feel if you only shoot your mark for one direction, then you have nowhere to grow to in terms of, you know, an arc or a mini arc or character or whatever.
But now on Fresh Off the Boat, you get to do comedy.
Yes.
But do you?
I've never done a sitcom.
I was going to say, you've never done a sitcom, though, right? Because I know you, when I first saw you, was Judging Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fan of that show.
But again, comic relief on a drama.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's like the dream. Like, to be the one that lets people go, Oh, okay, yeah. This is real. We can have a moment of, like, you know, levity.
Yeah. And talk about a cast of theater actors.
I mean, oh, yeah.
You know, all of them. Every single one of them.
I love that show.
Amy, Tyne, Dan Futterman.
And that happened, pretty quickly after you moved here?
Yeah. I got very lucky.
It's amazing.
I did the play, and then I got cast in Girl Interrupted. Mm-hmm. And I got cast in, my first thing I auditioned for was West Wing, and I got an episode of West Wing. And then the second thing was Judging Amy. And thinking I was a day player, which I was, I went in and like, bleh, bleh. I had so much fun. And I thought, like, this, I can pay my
rent. I'm never going to see them again.
Pay my rent this month. I'm never going to see them again. And I was like, ah. And Amy and I kept getting yelled at. We kept getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Because I was making her laugh. And then I thought, well, she was fun. That was nice. But I didn't even, like, learn her name. And I left. And and then they had me back again and back. And at that point, I'm like, I can't ask people's names. Like, I thought I was never going to. So it was just kind of funny.
Well, that's where the call sheet comes in handy.
Well, you know, I didn't even know what a call sheet was. So.
Oh, wow.
But and anyway, they invited me to stay. And I did six years, which was a pisser. We had so much fun.
And would you like to do that again?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Although courtroom dramas are tricky. Because, you know, as many people are in the scene, mm-hmm. that's how many camera angles you have to do.
Oh, God.
So I was used to, you know, 16-hour days every day. And then you go off and do these independent movies and there's only three people in the scene and you get the scene in the can in like 2 or 3 hours. And you're like, oh, I see. You don't have to always sit in the room for 16 hours to film a scene. So.
Oh, wow. You know. I know. Yeah, I was a big fan of that show and you were great on it. I loved watching it. And then you said, before that you did Girl Interrupted or you did it while, like, kind of around the same time?
I think I did Girl Interrupted before because I did Cider House in L.A. and then I did Girl Interrupted in New York. And while I was shooting Girl Interrupted, I did Cider House in New York. Mm-hmm. So I was shooting Girl in Harrisburg and doing an 8-hour play on the weekends in New York. God.
Yeah.
So it was a little like.
That's crazy. Nuts. But also, like, as an actor, it's so nice to be working.
Oh, because
no then complaints. When you're not, it's like, hello.
I know. Oh, believe me, I had a baby, and within 3 weeks, I was shooting in three different states. I was shooting a feature film in Minnesota and in New Mexico and shooting Judging Amy in Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
And literally, I'd be walking through the airport with my baby on my boob.
Like, wow.
Like, okay, gonna get a next flight. Where are we going? And, like, learning my lines and, like, running. It was hilarious. Wow. But, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about your babies.
You should.
You have two girls?
I do.
Is that right? And Hazel and what's the other?
Heloise.
Heloise. Oh, that's so cute. I saw a video of Hazel singing.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Adorable.
She's adorbs.
Also, I'm a little partial because she's a ginge.
She's a ginger. That's true. Duracell.
Yes. So tell me about your goals. What is it like? Like, Hazel is how old?
10.
And then Heloise is how old?
6.
6. Wow. And you and your wife have been together almost 20 years?
20 years.
20 years?
Well, actually, October 28th. It'll be 20 years.
Oh, wow.
I've been so busy.
Oh yeah, I was going to say. Oh, that's a big one.
It's October already. I got to figure that one
out. Yeah, you got just a couple weeks.
Okay, I got to figure it out.
Yeah. Mm. You got married around Halloween.
Well, no. That's when we first met.
Oh, so you count when
we've been married 3 times and then they kept canceling them and then we'd get married again and they'd cancel them. Oh. So we have a lot of anniversary dates.
Oh, okay.
But the first time we were actually like, I like you, was at a Halloween party at Annex Theater in Seattle.
Oh, wow. So, in Hollywood, though, that's like 100 years. Being with someone for 20 years is like forever.
Yeah.
I tell people, my husband and I have been together almost 18 years, mm-hmm. But I still look so young. But I tell people that, and they're like, "Oh my God, what's that like?" You know, they're like in it horrified like a, and in awe at the same time.
Sometimes it felt like a week. Sometimes it felt like a century. But
right,
you know,
right. And so you guys have been together almost 20 years. You've got 2 kids. Mm-hmm. How are you managing your auditioning, your writing that you're doing? How are you juggling all of that? Because I personally am tired.
and I just have well, you're still in the young, you're in young zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's little. I mean, mine are at school.
Oh, see, that's nice. Okay. But before that, though,
Do you have the Mo Willems book, Time to Pee?
No. What is that?
It's going to potty train your kid.
She's doing great with pee. Mm. It's poop isn't the challenge.
All right, I'm sorry about that.
Poop is the.
I can't help you with that.
You can't help with the poop.
No
tips, really? They just pooped on their.
I got nothing.
Oh, God. All right. I'll keep searching. So, how is it with 2 girls? That's a lot of.
It's amazing. It's awesome. It's great. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot having two kids. I mean, you know, but I am also an actor, so very frequently I work from home.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I shot kittens, I mean, I made it in my garage. So mm-hmm. it wasn't like I was in a theater till 4 a.m. hanging lights while right. my kids were at home, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't providing for them. So, it's, you know, when you're a writer, you can write in your house. When you're, you know, filming or editing, you can do it in your house. So I'm always around. So it's, you know, if I'm filming, we get it done. So
now your wife Alice is also in the business, right?
Yes, she is.
She's a writer, and what else? Is she an actor too?
Yes, she okay. is.
So do you find then that your girls are sort of have dramatic leanings, or are you encouraging that, discouraging
yeah.
that?
Yes, they both seem to have dramatic leanings, and the show that I made, I put mm-hmm. them both in it, and they're pretty.
I saw that.
Darn funny.
Yes.
So. Yes, they're very good at it just because, and you know, they help me with my lines for auditions, you know, if they're not
oh,
adult
nice.
Scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes me be my best because I want to be cool in front of them. You know
sure.
what I mean? So I learn my lines faster trying to impress my children.
Oh,
so.
I love that. Are they impressed?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Are they like, oh, mommy? Mom.
No, they're totally line Nazis.
Oh,
it's like, mommy, awesome. You made that a compound word and it's not. You know, so.
You're like, wow, okay.
I'm like, okay. What's a compound word?
You have to go Google it.
Yeah, exactly.
I dread the day that my child is smarter than me.
Oh, it's coming.
It may have already happened because sometimes she says things and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, I stopped 2 years ago helping my kid with math homework.
Are you doing the Common Core thing? Is that... Have you heard about this?
Because yeah,
everyone keeps telling me it's terrible. You're going to hate it. And I'm like,
I don't know. It's just, I can't help her with her math. It's all yeah. new. Like, I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, I did it this way. And she's like, mommy.
Yeah.
That's barbaric. You know what I mean? And like, yeah. I can't help her. So.
Yeah.
But she's, you know, doing fine.
So. All right. Well, I'm dreading the day that she has to start coming to me with math homework and anything like that. I'll be like, go ask your father. Because I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, exactly.
And he'll probably say, go ask your mother.
I say it in my house too, even though there yeah. is, you know, I'm like, ask your father.
And they're like, wait a minute.
They're like, what?
So I definitely want to talk about Kittens in a Cage.
Oh, cool.
So I watched the whole series and mm-hmm. I loved it.
Thank you.
The music, the feeling that you get when you're watching it are so spot on for, I think, of what you were trying to capture. Mm-hmm. Like, you nailed it.
Thank you.
Where, first of all, tell me about the show and tell me like a little bit about where the inspiration came from to write it.
Floating back to Seattle, mm-hmm. We were of a certain age where I literally flew up for a memorial service for a friend, and my old theater that I hadn't really participated in, although I do still know some people there, mm-hmm. was doing the play version of Kittens in a Cage, written by Kellyn Conway Blanchard.
Okay.
And I did not see the production, but I had a hunch and I wanted to read it, and I was looking for something to film, and I had not had success.
And were you looking for something to film because you were just like, I need to create my own
yes
something to get on, you know?
I wanted to do something I was afraid of.
Yeah.
And
I totally understand that.
In Seattle, years ago, I had done all the independent films, and I'd, you know, fish pulled a shotgun and recorded sound, and I'd hold cameras and be thrown down hills and shopping carts, and I did all of that. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there was an editing studio that I helped. I was on the charter membership for, which is now huge, Northwest Film Forum, it turned into. But, you know, and I got to the point where people just think of me as an actor and an actor, even though I've won every award in the city, theater directing.
Yeah.
And producing. And I wanted to make something my own. I had written so many scripts and they'd been to this place and we were going to make it and then it never happened. And I thought, I just want to make something from soup to nuts, mm-hmm. vertical and horizontal. I want to make sure I can finish it myself. And so I wanted to make Kittens.
And was it specifically a TV show you wanted to make, or was it a film? Because it didn't start off
as a
film.
I didn't know what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So I decided to film it in a feature format,
okay.
knowing that if you make the necklace, you could always chop the necklace apart later.
Oh, okay.
Whereas it would be harder to take tiny little beads and string them together
after
the fact. So I wanted to scare myself, and I wanted to direct, and I wanted to have fun, and I wanted to just rip it with my friends and not ask anyone's permission. And and I kickstarted it, and we, you know, got around $50,000, not quite, after mm-hmm. we paid our fees. And we did it, you know, raised money 1 month, did pre-production the next, put it in the can the next. And so it was in the can relatively quickly.
I was going to say, how many days did you shoot?
16.
Wow. And you shot it all in and around LA?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And it was very stylized, in that sort of women in prison feel of the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Those, what's the Cage movie? The woman
Caged.
Yeah, Caged.
Eleanor Parker.
What's the Caged movie? Oh, that one's called Caged. Yeah. very stylized like that. And was that purposeful on your part?
Yeah. I mean, Colleen is like a brilliant dialogue writer. And I just took her stuff and I thought like, well, this, you know, the play mostly took place in one room. And so I had to bust it out visually because theater is a text driven medium.
Did you add the flashbacks or like the cut tos?
No, a lot of those I put in the script and then I let the actor show up and rip them because we had some swell actors.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just busted it out and made it a screenplay and more visually inspired than perhaps a text driven theater play. And so, you know, we wrote it, we had a reading. I had a couple actors come to the table and I just knew the minute we read it, people were howling with laughter.
Oh.
And I had worked with this actress, Rebecca Mozo, when I was directing something at USC and she's, you know, a classically trained actor, but you know, she'd walk around the corner and be like, holy shit, what are we doing here? And I'd be like, are you from Jersey? And then I just thought she was so terrific that when this role came up, I thought, oh, I got to get Mozo.
She played Junie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I got Mozo and saw her read it in my living room table, and I flew to Colleen down from Seattle, and we just all but pissed ourselves. We just had so much fun.
That's so great. And Rebecca Fields in it as well.
Oh, she is. I love her.
She's so wonderful. Great.
She plays Janine, the axe-murdering beauty queen.
Yes, and you play a very hungry cannibal.
I do. I play
silent but deadly.
I play, you know, it's all heightened reality. Yes, I don't have a tongue, so it's not possible for me to speak. You know, and interestingly enough, my show was in the can 6 months before Orange is the New Black came out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So I'm sure you got a lot of comparisons then.
We did, which is silly because there is no comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably have a $3 million budget. We have a $50,000 budget.
Right.
We are a campy comedy.
Yes.
They are not. You know what I mean?
They're definitely more.
Theirs is based on a book.
Heavier drama, yeah.
So, you know, and I think Mozo is the one who put it more succinctly. She said, you can have ER and you can have Scrubs.
Mm-hmm.
They both take place in hospitals, but you're not pitting them against each other.
Right.
So, you know.
So was that trouble for you when you were shopping around and trying to get distribution? Or that happen before Orange is the New Black came out?
I did have a friend who was a mucky muck at Netflix who said, oh, we have Orange is the New Black. And so, and then I was like, oh, well, you know, and I ended up at other places. So,
Cause I watched it on Hulu.
Yeah.
So how did it end up there? Cause is it like, you have to go around to the networks or to, you know, now you've got all these online options and got this like finished product.
It's kind of a funny story. I mean, I had some swell actors in it for sure.
Yeah. I love that you keep saying swell. That's so cute.
She's swell. And so honestly, I signed up for a month free business test of LinkedIn and I wrote all the content acquisition people in the city and hooked up with a company by accident called TV4. And they're a new distribution company. And I had invited someone that I thought was one of my theater friends because they had the same name. And this person of the same name came to our screening.
Oh, wow.
And we got distribution because of it, which was hilarious. And
oh my God,
they're both
fantastic.
Friends now. so, you know, we got it fairly quickly. But I'd also, you know, put in for all these film festivals. So we had the feature cut. And later, Hulu made us, or didn't make us, but we cut it up into 7 episodes.
Okay, because were they thinking it would be better served as a series kind of thing?
Yeah, so they're about 7 20-minute episodes.
And you were okay with that, even though you originally had envisioned it as a film? Because I know some people get really attached to their project, and they're like, no, this is, this is a feature, or this is what it's meant to be.
Well, I mean, a feature is just a long movie, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's the same work, it's just in shorter bites.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, no, I wasn't, you know, hoity-toity about how long it was and how people saw it or anything like that.
So what happens with it now? Where does it go now? Are you hoping to continue to do more episodes, or is that up to, like, how many people watch it?
Well, I just finished the second script.
Okay.
And we have a treatment for the third script as well.
Great.
We're in sort of in the fundraising portion of that.
Great.
I'm trying to figure out how we get it made. And, you know, and this time, because it wasn't based on an original work, Kelly and I worked together on it. So as a producer, I could be like, okay, well, let's shoot here because I already have that location. I already know this people and I know that and we can do this. And so we sort of wrote it to suit our needs. But bigger cast, more songs.
Yeah, the songs. I wanted to talk to you about that. Yeah. Love the music. I've had the theme song in my head for a few days now as well. So great. Is that a friend of yours that wrote all that music or is that another song?
Well, pretty much everyone in it is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so great.
I tell everybody it was the Stone soup of, you know, I had a bucket of water and a rock and nothing else, truly. Yeah. And everybody put their parsley in their bone and their carrots.
Oh, nice.
Ty Taylor and I went to school together. He's the lead singer of a band called Vintage Trouble. And they're an unbelievable, amazing band. Like, truly one of the most incredible live experiences I've had. And you should check them out. I mean, they since signed with Capitol Blue Note.
And did they also write the songs that Junie was singing throughout? And
no. All the songs are from all different sources. And a very talented writer named Rick Miller from Seattle wrote, I think, the main four songs. And then I wrote a couple songs. And we had a lot of help. We had Black Sabbath, the all-female cover band.
I was like, Black Sabbath?
Black Sabbath. They're hysterical.
Black Sabbath.
They're awesome. And they did Make 'Em Pay, and Rick Miller of Seattle wrote that. Mm-hmm. Ty Taylor and Vintage Trouble did the theme song, Kittens in a Cage. Mm-hmm. And he rips it.
Oh, it's so good.
We rip it. And then I wrote the song that Constantine Maroulis, American Idol, sings under... the lovemaking.
Yeah.
I don't give anything away. And then
I was watching it at work.
Yeah.
And I had some downtime. I hope my coworkers don't hear that. But and I was watching it and I was like, oh, I hope no one sees what I'm watching. But then I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Heather's a lesbian.
Right.
Pass it on. Secret lesbian.
And then I wrote the song the kind of funny song that LaToya London sings in the talent show, which is a little bit of silly fun. So, you know, we sort of did it. I mean, but literally, like, my friend from my high school band, Ray Wilcox in San Francisco, I was like, can you play this on the ukulele and send it back to me? So he'd play it on GarageBand and send it back. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have, you know, it was just as you.
And how long did it take you to put all this together? I know you said you had, you know, your script and then all that, but like, what about post production stuff, all your editing? And did you do all that or did you?
Primarily I did the rough cut by myself, only because I didn't have an editor or any money.
Yeah, sure.
So, and I didn't know how to edit when we began, but I was very, very fortunate to find an incredible editor named Freddie de la Vega, who is not only an incredible editor, but also an incredible loyal friend.
Yeah.
Now having gone through this process with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will jump in front of a bullet for that man.
Aww,
because he really, he stood by me. And it's not easy, you know, editing these things because, you know, you're under the gun. But we were incredibly lucky to have, you know, amazing continuity and amazing, you know, sound. And so, you know, it came together pretty swell.
Yeah. I always feel like I want to create my own content. I want to create. I have so many ideas swirling around. But my biggest fear and the biggest hurdle that I have to get over is the production side of it. Because I wouldn't even know where to begin to go and find a DP or a good sound crew. Because sound is so important. If your sound is effed up, then it's like, oh my God.
Travis Brown is his name. He was the sound mixer and recorder. He did everything, the lavs, the boom. And it was like a blind boom, Craigslist kind of thing. And I've worked with him since, and I hope to work with him in the future because he really kicked it.
So hard. Some of it is just sort of a blind faith, like you're hoping that.
You know, in the first day or two, if you're like, oh my God, or you're like, holy cow.
What was that like for you, executive producing and being in it? I know you said, I read somewhere that you gave yourself a little bit smaller part so that you could do more of the stuff.
I gave myself a part with no lines.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd be like, and cut! You know, and I'd run behind the camera. It was great. It was fun. Because I did it in Seattle for all those productions, you know, multitasking's nothing for a mom. I mean, God. And we had all those swell actors. I mean, everyone I asked was like, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, and these are people like, We have Tyne Daly.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have some really big
Tyne Daly guests. Won 6 Emmys, like Michelle Monaghan is Golden Globe nominated, like for True Detective. We had Felicia Day.
Yeah, Felicia Day.
Goodness sake. Mm-hmm. And because I had done a couple episodes of The Guild.
Oh,
and
really?
And so she, you know, I stuck her in a scene with a monkey.
I was with her at Acme years ago. She wouldn't remember because I think she was like in a couple companies above mine. I was just starting out and before she left. But yeah, she's great.
But then it was one of those things where I didn't know Misha Collins, but I approached him and he said, well, if you'd be in my web series, I'll be in your web series.
Oh, so there you go.
He started doing trade and
Drew Drogi was in there.
Drew, who we love.
Yeah, he was my improv teacher at the Groundlings. So I was like, Drew Drogi.
He's hysterical. And then Joel McHale and I did crappy 8mm black and white movies in Seattle together.
Yeah.
So he showed up.
Oh, that's nice. So you've known him for a while.
Out of that scene.
Yeah.
And every, I mean, just everybody.
Yeah, it's jam packed with stars for sure.
It really is. But and stars who like, you know, ate my craft services that I got at Costco. So it was kind of, it was incredibly generous and incredibly, people were wonderful.
That's
they
so
just
nice.
Want to play. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. So. I think that's but that's my hesitation is that I'm afraid that I will put myself out there. There's that fear of the unknown, of failure, you know, a lot in this town, and that you'll create this thing and you'll put yourself out there and then nobody will show up or,
I think to begin is the thing, because if I had any, I honestly thought I'd be done it in the can like in a couple of months. I thought, oh, it's a web series. I think to begin is a thing, and you learn as you go. And now I know so much more in terms of producing and all of that. But you don't necessarily, when you get on the train, you don't know if you're going to get off in Switzerland or Belgium. I mean, and you don't need to know in some way. You just got to get on the train.
I was going to say, do you feel like it's just sort of, just giving it a try? You have to try.
All you can do is tackle the moment right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And hope that the moment down the line is achieved, but you know, there's forks in the road. It turned out better than I had expected. You know, it's hilarious. Like, and it was all like help of my family and friends, and literally like my niece is a violinist, and her, you know, her thesis was playing, you know, something at Vanderbilt where she went to school. And I literally asked her if I could take her violin line and use it as part of the music.
Oh,
and
wow.
My brother's doing the graphic designer. I thought he was just going to make a poster. Well, here we are, like, I think we're 20 film festivals later.
Mm-hmm.
I call him weekly. I'm like, can you make another Laurel so we can put it on the you know? So we're truly blessed. I mean, it turned out so wonderful. And it's funny. And it's got something for everyone. It's a comedy. It's sci-fi. It's not apologetic, as you've seen.
Yeah it's great. I mean, it's very much like you can tell that these actors are having fun, and you can tell that they're enjoying it for
sure.
And
we made a family.
We made
and you can, because we're having fun, I think it's fun to watch, and we want to do it again. I mean, we see each other on a weekly basis.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, everybody.
And so what is like your ultimate goal then? Would you like to be on another series on TV? Would you like to still have the freedom to do your own series and, you know, keep doing Kittens in a Cage, or, you know, features, all of it? Like, what is the dream scenario for you?
I want it all.
All of it.
You know, it's interesting. When I was in Seattle, I started sort of making my name more as a director.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came here, I was fortunate enough to be lucky and act. And, you know, actually amazing features. I mean, I've worked with incredible directors. Like Winterbottom, James Mangold. I mean, you know, it goes on and on. But I love directing and I love producing. You know, I would love for people to see, wow, she really knocked it out of the park with very little resources.
Mm-hmm.
I would love for more.
And maybe someone bring you another project with a few, you know, like a budget behind it or something like that.
Completely.
So you wouldn't mind directing again and being
behind the camera?
Oh, I'd love
it. I'd kill to do it. I love doing both, but they're very separate activities.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just have so much fun doing it all. So.
Yeah. Well, I know, well, part of the reason too, and I should have said this earlier on, but part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because when I had that small part on Fresh Off the Boat last year, you were so nice and so warm and welcoming on the show. And, it's such a weird feeling whenever you're like that tiny little co-star part, going on, you just have a couple of lines, like people treat you kindly, but it's different. They know you're here for like a few hours and then they're never going to see you again. So it's so nice that you bring that warmth. And I have a feeling that wasn't just unique to that day. I have a feeling you probably do that everywhere you go. Why do you do that? What is important to you about, like, you know, being so warm and friendly on set?
Oh, first of all, thank you. I'm a Jersey girl, so I don't get called warm and friendly very often.
I'll take it back then.
I think to be in this business and to be working and bringing stories to other people and making other people laugh, you can't be anything but incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
And, you know, a person is a person, whether they're making $800 million a year or, you know, $700 a day or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there, I don't believe there is a upper or lower echelon of person. And, I'm just grateful to be able to do what I love for a living.
Yeah.
And having been able to do that for decades is so fortunate to me. So, that's all. I'm just grateful to be able to have the pleasure of working with you or, you know, whoever else I've had the pleasure of working
with.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's probably why so many people were willing to step in and help you, honestly.
Maybe.
So don't stop
being
nice. I have
bought a lot of pitchers of beer.
Oh, there you go. That's it. Beer as bribes. Yeah, I love it. And Kittens in a Cage is going to be at a film festival coming up in a few weeks. Did I read that right?
Yes. Several, actually. I literally was in Shreveport, Louisiana a week ago. Mm-hmm. We played at the Sham Film Festival in St. Louis last weekend, 2 weeks ago.
And is the point of the festivals? Is that just to get the word out, to get other
awareness? It's to get the word out. It's to get awareness. Mm-hmm. We're in the New York Television Festival, which is a huge and amazing opportunity.
Yeah. And do they play all of the episodes at once, or they just play it as one long piece?
They're playing the pilot.
Oh, they play the pilot. Okay.
And then we're also playing at the Deloitte International Film Festival on the 14th, which I just found out about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I think people see it and they respond to it and they think, you know, I mean, what truly to apply for festivals, it's a half a bottle of wine. You're sitting at your kitchen table and you go on without a box and you think, that sounds cool. Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
And the people I've met and the other people making projects is so incredible. And it's all a resource. And I mean, I've made like incredible friendships just on the festival circuit alone. You know, just saying, how did you do that? What was that motel location? And can you tell, because I could use it in my next piece. And
yeah,
and it's just a big family and a community and actors, and we're nomads, so you know, if you see a cactus and there might be water over there, you know, you want to walk that way,
right?
So.
Right. Oh, I love that. Well, I think that I hope that you guys have a second season, because it's such a great show. I hope that all the success continues for you. Where can everybody find more information about Kittens?
Well, we have a pretty swell website, www.kittensinacage.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Twitter, which is Kittens in a Cage. We're
and
on Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
Kittens in a Cage. We're pretty much everywhere. You know, Instagram, Kittens in a Cage. Tumblr, Kittens in a Cage. So, yeah, and we have some great, like, just last night I put out some hilarious, you know, behind the scenes footage of me filming a laundry scene where they shove her head in a steamer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we do have really great extraneous content, like the making of the theme song with Vintage Trouble and EPK interviews. We've got hilarious outtakes.
So you like have the whole thing, like you have got it down in terms of like packaging this thing and like it is ready to go.
Well, you know, when you're waiting between scenes and you got actors sitting around, it's more fun to see, like, why are you here? What are you doing? Why would you take this part? And, you know, and you know, hilarious. Or if you're waiting for, when you have low funds and you're trying to complete something, you're waiting for a particular department to finish.
Mm-hmm.
You think, I mean, I cut a music video on an airplane flying home to visit my mother. Like,
oh wow.
You know, when Constantine recorded that song that I wrote.
That was so random, by the way. And he totally does look like Jesus.
I know. Well, and he's I've known him since he was 4. He grew up on my street in New Jersey.
Wow.
He was my paper boy.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
You know what I mean? His brother and I were in bands in high school, and he's my best friend. You know what I mean? So,
oh, I love that.
Yeah, and he used to call me his mentor, which is hilarious to me because he's far surpassed my career. But now he's mentoring my daughter, who's a guitar player, singer. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I took video footage of him singing that song. And I, on the plane, I just cut it. I stuck a 2 terabyte drive on my my computer and cut it in Final Cut, mm-hmm. and literally like put it out, and then Broadway World ran with it, and this, like, you know, wow. it got bumped out. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, if they know I like cut it in 4 hours on my computer, like, it's hysterical. But you know,
well,
you
now
do,
they know.
You do what you can. If you're trapped in a plane, you know you can cut a music video. So.
I think it's also due just making best use of your time. Mm-hmm. Which I'm not going to lie, some days when she's napping, I just want to stare at the TV and watch Big Brother totally. Or some just like mindless something.
Absolutely.
And then I'm like, oh, I'm such a slacker. I should have been doing something for the website or something for the podcast. And, you know, I just zone out.
Yeah, when I used to write, we used to write until 10, 11 o'clock at night, and mm-hmm. Alice and I sit at the kitchen table and passionately bandy thoughts about, yeah. and then all of a sudden, like, now, the minute they get in bed, we're like, good night.
Good night. Yeah, and you have two, so I can't imagine, like, it would be like, you take that one, I'll take this one. it's
well, now my work hours are like 7 a.m. till 10.
Yeah.
And like now they're,
do you find that your life is, that your lifestyle is sort of shifted in that you used to like stay out late and go buy beer for everybody?
Oh, I was
and...
an Olympic athlete. Yes. Staying out late.
Yes.
Yeah.
There completely. Would be nights where my husband and I would just be like, call the cab. Like, we're just having the best time ever. Yeah. Drunk as hell. And now,
well, you can't do that.
You can't. You can't wake
up.
Can't.
And as you get older, you can't wake up and be that damaged and function. So that behavior has been obliterated.
You have to grow up. Kids make you grow up a little bit, mm-hmm. whether you're ready for it or not.
And not. And yeah. not grow up.
Yes, because there's the other way. Yes, there's yeah. some days where I'm, you know, playing silly tickles or like making faces and all that stuff, and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm a grown woman.
Yeah, well, and hey, and
but
Hazel
it's fun.
And
I wouldn't trade it.
You know, both my kids play guitar, so every night we play guitar.
Oh,
and then,
I love that. You
and,
do you play too?
I don't play a thing.
Oh, because you played in the show, and I thought, fake, oh my god, this I woman does everything.
I can play. I could fake chords. I can fake piano. I can fake bass. I can fake drums. I play the drums in Bad Teacher behind Justin Timberlake.
Oh,
they
yes,
literally
that's
cast
right,
me like,
right.
you play the drums, right? And I was like, yeah, play the drums. Yeah, you bet.
You bet.
And I'm like, when do I have to play the drums? So like Wednesday. I'm like, okay. Then I'd sit with a bucket and some sticks and like figure it out.
You know, yourself.
That's what actors do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Professional liars. Uh-huh. But anyway, so Hayes, you know, Hayes making these little YouTube videos and stuff, and we'll sit every night and she'd be like, I want to watch a video with Taylor Swift. I'm like, okay, but you have to watch this Chrissy Hynde guitar solo first. So,
good
you
for
know,
you.
It's, so it's fun. You get
you
to
can
old
watch
school
Taylor,
her.
But then you have to watch Chrissy Hynde.
Exactly.
I love it.
So.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah. Well, I hope good things happen for Hazel, too, in her music career. That's very exciting.
Oh, and Heloise is no slouch, either. She's yeah. more of like a punk rock thrasher.
Oh, nice.
She's six. She kind of sounds like Bob Dylan. She's a star.
Oh, my God.
But the two of them are starting to play together, which is amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Channing started saying out of the blue the other day, are you ready to rock?
Oh, nice.
And I was like, where did you hear that?
And you didn't scream, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was like, yeah. But then she has her little guitar, and she would go, are you ready to rock? And I was like, what? Where did you? Was I listening to like Twisted Sister one
yeah,
day
yeah,
and I didn't exactly. know that?
That's
I'm
funny.
Sure she heard me say it or Chris say it or something sometime. But I am so in awe. And I'm going to gush for just a second about you. I'm so impressed with all of the things that you have done. I feel like such a slouch because I too started my career a little bit later than the average, you know, megastar or whatever.
I came
start...
to LA later. I
was oh yeah, that's right. I started.
In the
I came to
in
LA.
Seattle.
Yeah, I came to LA much later, thinking, man, I've got an uphill battle. So watching you and seeing what you've done, I'm so impressed. And I do feel like a big slacker. But I will say mostly I feel inspired. So I totally wanted to make sure you know that
oh my
I'm...
gosh. I think it's cool what you're doing
I'm
here.
My little podcast?
It's cool.
It's really cool. And people seem to really enjoy it. And I'm like, good. All right, I should swear more. And like, you know, I should do more appropriate things. But anyway, so I think it's great. I think Kittens in a Cage is great. Everybody stop what you're doing. Go to Hulu right now and watch Kittens in a Cage.
It's on Amazon. It's
on Amazon.
It's on Vessel. Mm-hmm. It's on Vimeo.
Oh, wow.
So they're all different platforms. Vimeo's international.
Everywhere.
Hulu's North America. So you can find it if you're looking for it.
Yeah, just
give it a 5-star review.
Yeah, give it a 5-star review. And thank you so much for coming on the show. Oh, I really appreciate it.
That was harmless.
Yeah, it's so easy, right? Yeah. I'm not so bad. This is not, it's not Diane Sawyer up in here. It's just a couple of moms talking.
That's right.
Mom actors. So everybody, check out Kittens in a Cage, and then also go to motherhoodinhollywood.com. for more info about Jillian and stuff that's happening here at Motherhood in Hollywood. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you. Yeah, thanks, Jillian.
Bye.
Bye, and we'll see you guys next week.
Mama funny.
Balls.